And now to a very different challenge, a secondary school where most of the students are new arrivals to Australia. Holroyd High School is in Western Sydney. Two-thirds of its students are refugees, and more than 80% of them speak little or no English. On top of that, some of them are living in community detention without their parents. However, despite those disadvantages, the students have achieved remarkable results. School principal Dorothy Hoddinott has been at Holroyd High for nearly two decades, and here she is talking about the secret to her school's success with RN's Richard Adey.
I've got two schools in one. I have the high school, which is from year 7 to 12, conventional high school, and then I have something called an intensive English centre. An intensive English centre is a school within a school where children of non-English speaking background go to learn English and to learn what's expected of them in school for up to a year after they arrive in Australia.
So do most of your students go to that before they start high school proper?
No, probably about 25% of the students in the high school have been through the intensive centre. The others have enrolled in year 7 or in the years following that.
But
there's 100% of kids in the intensive centre have been in Australia less than a year. So over the whole school, we estimate something like 62% of all the children are of refugee background. And in the school currently, I have about 90 young people who are either in community detention or on bridging visas, having come to Australia as asylum seekers. It's quite high. That's a very high proportion. That makes us quite a different sort of school population to the normal.
So they are overwhelmingly not from Australia.
Yes.
Without English as a first language.
Yes.
Many of them have come from, who have seen already a degree of trauma.
Yeah.
Because of what they've left. And they're mostly not well off at all.
That's true.
And some arrive without parents, don't they?
Yes. The majority of the young people who are in community detention, well, all of them, are unattached or unaccompanied minors. That is, they are mainly boys because somehow it's safer for boys to travel through the world than it is for girls. Not very safe for either boys or girls, let me say, but girls are very much more vulnerable. And so the majority, all of these are boys who either are orphans or have lost their families or whose families have in a desperate move sent them out into the world in the hope that they will find somewhere to settle and be able to make something of their lives.
So does that mean when they're at school, they're still in detention?
They're in community detention. It means that they live in the community. If they're under 18, they live in hostel type accommodation run by organisations like Marist Youth or the Red Cross, for example. When they turn 18, they're no longer eligible for that sort of supervision and accommodation, so they are forced to move into the community, often into shared accommodation with other young men.
Actually, that's another point, isn't it?
Yeah.
That a lot of them, because they've had such interrupted schooling or maybe no schooling at all in the way we would think about it, by the time you get them, and certainly by the time they leave you, they're older than 18.
Yes.
Some of them are 20 or 21.
Yes, that's correct.
They're not children at all. By
no, then. No, but they're young people and they are in need of an education. I really don't think we should deny young people an education. It's an essential part of modern expectations, but it's also the pathway, if you like, to a reasonable future for young people.
But you're not daunted by this.
No, I don't think we should be. As schools are not places easily daunted by things like diversity, and certainly in Australia, certainly in Sydney, which takes 40% of the net migration to Australia, after all, a lot of that very diverse background, a lot of that non-English-speaking background. Schools are used to dealing with diverse enrolments, diverse communities, different cultures, religions, and so on. So that's part of what we do.
And when they leave you, 40% of them go to university. which is higher than the 30% average for New South Wales.
For the whole of Australia,
About
40, it's an average of about 40% of all of our students who go on to university. So we've been roughly around 40%, sometimes a little less, sometimes a little more, now since 2008. There's a story in that. I read the Bradley Review of Higher Education report over the school holidays at the beginning of 2008. That's how principals spend their school holidays, reading things like that. And I was much taken by the very strong message in that report. And I went back to school, and the first day we had a full assembly at school in term one, I said to the whole school, well, about 30% of our students got into university this year, and that's a good thing. But I've just read a report that says that 40% of young Australians should go to university. So from now on, I expect 40% of you to go to university. And they've met that challenge ever since, really.
Actually, you have a little word at the beginning of every school year with Year 12, don't you?
I do.
And you say, this is how last year did. Yes. I expect you to do better.
I do say that.
And do they always, nearly always do that?
Yes.
I
also say to them, do all your work and work hard and remember it's only three terms and so on and don't fall in love.
Yes.
Because it does get in the way of good results at the HSC.
All right. Well, yes. I want to backtrack. So when they arrive, what do you do? What's your immediate kind of response to them to get them going?
Well, obviously, students of this kind are enrolled in the intensive centre and they assess whether they're literate or not. Some of our mid-teen arrivals have never been to school. We have to start by teaching them to read and write and learning how to hold a pen, all those things that children learn when they're five-year-olds in our mainstream community. So we assess where they're at, what sort of educational background they have, whether they've had missing education. The average for young refugees is about 4 years of missed schooling. So we make that assessment. We put them into classes, small classes, where their needs can be met. And we work very, very hard with them. And that's the start of their journey. Then we prepare the students for the sort of academic learning that they will need to do the HSC. And in some cases, we prepare them also for TAFE.
So it's a tailored, practical approach.
Yeah, absolutely.
But underlining it or underpinning it is this culture of expectations.
Yes.
You are going to do well.
Yes.
And they all take it on.
Yes, it's not just a culture of expectations. It's also building... we don't believe in a sense of entitlement in our school. Our kids, in fact, mostly don't have a sense of entitlement because they know that the world doesn't owe them anything. They've had sometimes brutal personal experiences that show them that. So we build the idea that you are a member of society and you put back into society, you give to society what society gives you. The education that you get doesn't entitle you to sit back and feel that you don't have to do anything. It actually obliges you to participate in society as a citizen and to do things. We collect quite a lot of money for charities each year in the school. This is from a very poor community. When we're doing this, I will stand in front of the assembly and say, I know most of you don't have much money. But you know, if each and every one of you puts in 20 cents, then we will have quite a lot of money. It's when we all do things together that we are showing our capacity in this regard. We all should remember that there are people who are worse off than us. And so that sort of message is going out at the same time. It's sort of practical citizenship. It is not related to a sort of knowing about, you know. I have got no idea and I'm not interested in how many people there are in the Senate, for example. I think that's part of civics and citizenship formal courses. And but there's a practical citizenship. We model leadership. We model good citizenship. We model responsibility. We model respect for other people. We we embed those concepts into what we do, and we build expectations. And part of that expectation says, you are intelligent enough to do this. You need to educate yourself to the full extent, and then you need to give back into society.
Dorothy, you've been out more or less 20 years. What was Holroyd High like when you arrived?
I think it was a very typical outer suburban school. There were fewer non-English speaking background students there. I think it was an underperforming school, and there weren't very high expectations for particularly the immigrant students who were starting to come into the school. The intensive centre had not long been established over the protests of elements of the school community, and at that stage the intensive centre teachers were denied access to the full facility of the school. And that was something which I addressed immediately. I was appalled to discover that, for example, they couldn't use the art rooms change that around. The level of expectations weren't sufficient, and so there weren't sufficient young people going on to tertiary education, for example, and there should have been more, because the majority of the students had gone to school since they were 5 years of age. They spoke English at home.
So how long did that take? Were you like a dose of salt in there?
No.
Bang.
No.
End of the second term, it's all
no,
different.
No, you can't do that. You can't do that. Change is a gradual process, and it's a long-term thing. I think when you move into a situation where change is necessary, you have to think how you achieve that change and how you achieve it in a way that the people who work in the school and the whole school community, the teachers, the parents, the students, embrace that as part of their own culture. You can't walk into a place and say, okay, we're changing this overnight. Some things had to be changed immediately. Yes, you will have access to the art room. Yes, the science labs will be made available to the intensive centre. Yes, there will be adequate dispersal of the student assistance funds and that sort of thing. I mean, there are some things which you have to change immediately, which as a principal you have the authority to do, and you would be remiss not to do. But other things, the culture of the school, that culture of expectations, that takes years to change.
School principal Dorothy Hoddinott, speaking there with Richard Adie.